UK is due to release its results on the public inquiry into the Alexander Litvinenko case on the 21st of January, so I thought I would read out my report on that case before those results are released. It's titled Revisiting Litvinenko, What Really Happened, on the Anti-Neocon Report. As we all know, Alexander Litvinenko was poisoned by polonium, a rare radioactive substance. The main narrative blamed it all on Vladimir Putin of Russia. The rationale rested on little other than because Litvinenko was a Putin critic. This was the quick line in mass media, and it was on all the typical war propaganda channels. There are many things wrong with the Putin did it story. For one, there's no motive. Even with Litvinenko being a critic of Russia, he was not a threat whatsoever to Putin. The man worked with Chechen terrorists and Israeli-Russian oligarchs. But assuming there was sufficient motive to kill him, think about this. Why would Russia use a very rare, very expensive, and easily traceable radioactive substance to kill him instead of some cheap poison or just shooting him? Why risk smuggling radioactive material into the UK? Yet that is exactly what the UK and US media would have you believe. They want to say that Putin had someone sneak into the United Kingdom with polonium and poison Litvinenko with it. It just isn't plausible. It's actually absurd. Alexander Litvinenko, who was formerly FSB, fled to the United Kingdom to avoid court prosecution in Russia, and he worked for the Russian oligarch Boris Berezovsky. Boris Berezovsky just so happened to be the Israeli-Russian oligarch who lived in London after he also fled the Russian judicial system for a multitude of crimes too long to list. He was on Interpol's most wanted list. And here's the grand prize. After the US and UK press branded Putin with the poisoning, despite there being zero evidence, something the US is very well known for now, investigators were tracking down traces of polonium in the UK. They detected traces of polonium at Berezovsky's offices and residence. Now, I don't know about you, but in my place of work, and certainly in my house, I do not have rare radioactive substances. Polonium is not something you just go pick up at the market or accidentally get while walking through the park. Yet no experienced mob boss like Berezovsky would be dumb enough to murder an underling in such a manner either. Therefore, his death was an accident. It was most likely a botched smuggling operation. Why was he moving such a dangerous substance? Did he need fast cash? Were they planning to create a dirty bomb? Such a smoky bomb would turn polonium into a powder and kill anyone who ingested it. Traces of polonium were found in the planes that Litvinenko had been on, so I think we can deduce what happened. He was a mule. The question remains, why did he have it? Where did he get it? What was he going to do with it? Why was it in the offices of Berezovsky and Aaron Systems at Britain's Blackwater? The Putin did it smear case has never made sense. First of all, the amount of polonium-210 in play would have cost millions of dollars. That amount is too expensive to purchase and too large to go unnoticed if it were stolen. The only way to obtain such a quantity would be on a well-organized black market that had a connection to a nuclear facility. It would certainly help organized crime if the nuclear-powered supplier they received the polonium from was not subjected to international inspections or part of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Such a country, foreign country A, which denied they even built nuclear weapons for decades, would certainly also deny selling their polonium byproduct as well. Is it possible to hide that from the press? Yes. The media would ignore this for the same reason the media ignores them stealing nuclear secrets and building hundreds of nuclear weapons in Dimona, and then throwing whistleblowers like Mordecai Vanunu in jail who took pictures of their warheads. Litvinenko was in Israel, where he met Leonid Nevzlin, the CEO of UKOS, shortly before he died. If you wanted to buy or steal radioactive material, that would be the place. What was he negotiating with Nevzlin? We learned Alexander had been an informant in a case that led to the arrest of 9 Georgian and Russian mobsters in Spain, including Alexander Golfstein, a lawyer for UKOS, who apparently was laundering money. The downfall began when the Georgian mob boss, Zakhar Kalashov, was arrested in May 2006. The scam was similar to what the old 5 families of New York had done when guys like Marilansky took profits from illegal gambling businesses and funneled them into buying up real estate in Florida. In the European case, the mob was taking illegal funds and buying up real estate in Spain, as well as making investments into legitimate businesses. Litvinenko's associates, Dmitry Kovtun and Andrei Lugeva, both of whom who had met Litvinenko on the day of the poisoning, were also both hospitalized. They left traces of polonium in Hamburg, as they had taken the trip to Germany before meeting Litvinenko. It appears all three were involved in a smuggling operation, but for whom? The short answer, Russian oligarch Boris Berezovsky's employee Alexander Litvinenko died from overexposure to polonium in a botched smuggling operation. That's why traces of it were at Boris's house and on the planes Litvinenko was riding to and from Israel. The smear on Putin using a highly traceable $10 million poison to kill a critic is about as plausible and rational as saying, "We have British intelligence about Niger." This transparent bogus lie was a quick and shamelessly sloppy explanation to cover up how and why this man in the UK had a radioactive poison in his body. Polonium only has a half-life of 138 days. Litvinenko had been in Israel to visit Yukos's CEO just shortly before he died. And it's an open secret that Israel has nuclear weapons, the only place without nuclear safeguard or inspections. Traces of polonium were also on the British Airway planes that Litvinenko took to and from Israel, so they would have the means, location, and timing, which all fit. But let's just blame Putin, the new Hitler, as the neocons have dubbed him. Why the fuss about a conspiracy claiming Putin put Litvinenko on his hit list and poisoned him? Well, as wacky as that story is, it was probably the best they could come up with on short notice. Boris knew once the police found out how Litvinenko died that there would be a lot of explaining to do. He also knew that if the investigation went forward, that they could find more of this polonium on his properties. So they just claimed the KGB was trying to kill them all. Some history. This is not the first time that Berezovsky tried to pin a murder on someone else and claim that all the damning evidence pointing to him was a frame. There are the notorious cases in Russia of Ivan Liskovich and Vlad Listyev. Ivan Liskovich was the general director of the Omsk oil refinery, easily the best refinery in Russia. Abramovich and Berezovsky planned to take over the refinery and make it part of Berezovsky's Sibneft, which it now is. Liskovich resisted. Ivan had outside investments from Lukoil, 10% of the stock, and CS First Boston. So in no way was he threatened to sink. Omsk was in the best location, had the best equipment, and it was positioned to continue to soar. They serviced the biggest oil producers in Russia. Naturally, Ivan did not want to be swallowed by Sibneft. August 19, 1995, Ivan was found drowned in the Irtysh River. I doubt he went there to swim. 5 days later, Sibneft, now Gazprom, took over. August 24, 1995, using his good buddy Yeltsin, Berezovsky got a presidential decree, numbered 872, to order a transfer of all the state shares of Omsk as well as four other companies to Sibneft. Then in 1996, Boris and Roman privatized Sibneft through a series of loans for share auctions that were a complete scam run through front companies and offshore banks, which Yeltsin approved of. The case may leave doubts in the mind until one learns about the murder of Vlad Listyev. In 1994, Boris attacked one of his rivals over control of a media outlet. Part of the attack was broadcast all over TV and came to be known as Faces in the Snow, as Boris' rival's bodyguards were forced at gunpoint to lie down in the snow. Shortly after, a 90-mile-an-hour speed chase and attacking his rival Gazinski's most guards, and pinning Gazinski in his own building, Berezovsky would take control of ORT, or Channel 1, through an illegal non-public auction and gain a near-media monopoly. For details on that, I recommend reading Godfather of the Kremlin, if you can still find it. It was written by the senior editor of Forbes in Russia, who holds a PhD in Russian history, Paul Klebnikov. For the record, Paul Klebnikov was killed after publishing the book on the oligarchs, particularly on Boris, who is on the cover. He was shot 4 times in Moscow while leaving work and then died in the hospital after getting stuck on an elevator. After the Gazinski event, Boris had another problem. Listyev, Listyev was probably the most popular talk show host in Russia and a TV producer. He was a business partner with Boris, but the problem was, he wasn't crooked. As general director of ORT, he decided to fix a multi-million dollar leak in the company, and an indirect way of Boris paying people off in the mob to do his dirty work, as well as paying himself by spending money for ads in other companies he owned, where he also ran the advertising sales. He had an offer from Sergei Listovsky to buy up the sector. Negotiations never went through, and Vlad had a different idea. On February 20th, 1995, Vlad announced that he would break the monopoly of Boris and Sergei. He called for a moratorium on ORT advertising until they could work out ethical standards. As you can imagine, that did not make Boris or the rest of the mob happy. 8 days later, Boris personally met with Nikolai, a mafia boss, and handed him $100,000 in cash. This was witnessed by two police officers who were monitoring the mob. Prior to that, Boris's lackey, Badri, offered money to a different gangster, but that man was arrested before he could do what was asked of him, and he confessed this in jail. On March 1st, the day after Borzovsky paid the second mob boss, Vlad Listyev was shot in the back at the entrance of his home. Guilty as sin with a confession against Badri, as well as being personally witnessed by two police offering another mob boss money, Boris was desperate. He was inches away from being arrested. Boris's TV network was cut out of government subsidies after the police raided it, and it was subject to become bankrupt. Fellow media giant and friend Rupert Murdoch promised to invest in the network and bail him out. How nice. And we all know where Murdoch stands. This relationship might also explain why Fox News and Sky News in the UK were so blatantly cheerleading for the Putin killed Litvinenko conspiracy story. But here's the real kicker. And it's just as outrageous and far-fetched as the Litvinenko poisoning. Boris concocted a story for Yeltsin, which was recorded on videotape produced by Irina Vestinskaya, a producer of ORT and a friend of Yeltsin's wife. The tape claimed that it was all a big conspiracy against Borisovsky and that the real culprit, who had no motive other than to frame Boris, apparently able to hire a gun to kill Vlad but not Boris, was none other than his bitter rival Gazinsky of Mosbank, who Boris had already tried to kill once. Yeltsin was paranoid of Gazinsky's political ambitions, and Boris knew this. Boris also blamed ex-KGB and said Vlad was killed by the Mos group, and not the mob he was witness meeting with a week after Vlad was going to break his monopoly. Sounds like Iraq moved its non-existent weapons of mass destruction to Syria just to make the US look bad. Give me a break. Boris claimed to be set up because he was loyal to Yeltsin, and so was his news media outlet. Yeltsin, ever the partner in cover-ups, not to mention a drunk and a thief, got Boris out of trouble once again by firing the lead investigators in the case, which intimidated others to drop it. There was a huge public outcry. A TV personality had been killed. ORT created a new company code ORT Advertising with a monopoly to sell ads on commissions, no less. And the boss man chosen was none other than Sergei Listovsky. Wow, how utterly shameless. And if you can speak Russian, or if you find an English copy of the Boris Lestinskaya tape transcript which was sent to Yeltsin, it's going to make you very angry. It's about as plausible as saying Putin risks an actual act of war in the UK to kill a critic who worked for both a criminal and who was a terrorist. So we know what didn't happen, but there still remains a whodunit. The quickest way to get to the bottom of this is to see who's lying the most and the loudest, because that's usually who has the most to hide. Remember Anna Politkovskaya? She was killed on Putin's birthday, and the alternative press, and the mindlessly accepting any conspiracy types who fell for it, tried to use that circumstantial evidence to blame the murder on Putin. These are the same types that claim that Russia bombed its own apartment buildings to start a war with Chechnya, omitting the fact that the apartment bombing took place 5 months after the war had already started. And the sources trying to blame the FSB were none other than Boris's lackey, Litvinenko, and well-known plagiarist David Satter, who wrote for the PNAC co-founder's Weekly Standard, which gave the world all the bogus lies about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction and connection to the September 11th attacks. Robert Kagan, the paper's co-founder with William Kristol, wrote an op-ed in the Washington Times calling Speaking of Iraq, which pushes every erroneous pre-war scare tactic there was. His wife, Victoria Nuland, is the same woman who was recorded on the phone saying F the EU and openly talking about who would be a good replacement prime minister in Ukraine. She chose Arseniy Yatsenyuk, who she called Yats, and he did become prime minister of Ukraine a month later after the coup. Everything out of this faction's mouth has been blindly anti-Russian. There is a huge difference between conspiracy and kookspiracy. Getting away from the outlandish, unsubstantiated claims about Anna's death, let's uncover something factual. Anna Politkovskaya was a journalist who had published 3 different articles on how someone was testing polonium on Chechen children. Gee, where have we seen that scenario before? Anna's articles were published in the Novaya Gazeta in 2006, and she was killed October of the same year. The Washington Post then makes this clever claim. Leonid Neflin, the former Yukos Oil Company shareholder and Russian exile currently living in Israel, told the Associated Press in late November that Litvinenko had given him a document related to a dossier on criminal charges made by Russian prosecutors against the people connected to Yukos. Neflin, who is charged by Russian prosecutors with having organized killings, fraud, and tax evasion, claimed Litvinenko's inquiries may have provided a motive for his poisoning. Notice who else is in the Washington Post article if you click the link. Scaramella. And who was planting the ideas that Putin had killed both Litvinenko and Anna? How crazy is that? To use polonium to murder someone. Scaramella is a rotten one. After Anna's lawyer, Stanislav Markloff, was murdered in 2009, followed by the murder of one of the key informants in Chechnya, Natalia Estimirov, the same year, there was a retrial in Anna's case, which went to the Supreme Court. Chechen President Ramzan Kadyrov stirred up a public disgust when he said about Anna's informant Natalia on Radio Liberty, "She was a woman who had never possessed any honor, dignity, or conscience." The prosecution cornered Dmitry Pravnyuteknikov, a former policeman who in turn confessed Lom Ali Getukayev was who negotiated the contract, and behind him he suspected Boris Berezovsky. Dmitry was sentenced to 11 years in jail. 5 men were found guilty in her murder. 3 were Chechen brothers who had been acquitted in the first trial, and they went to prison. Rustam Mahmudov and Lom Ali got life sentences in 2014. Berezovsky had died the year before, in March of 2013. The most troubling thing here is not that the mob did something illegal, or that the Western press jumped the gun to do an anti-Russian witch hunt. All of that is pretty run-of-the-mill. It isn't even that Israel secretly has nukes and is involved with organized crime. Again, imagine my lack of shock. It's not even the multiple murders that are most troubling. The most troubling part of the story is what was the ultimate purpose of that much polonium? What was it for, and why was it in the UK? The potential for a dirty bomb is enormous. With the current climate of ISIS and disgruntled youth in Europe joining the mercenary forces to fight Israel's enemies in Syria and Lebanon, a dirty bomb in the UK is not an unimaginable scenario. Just having such a thing also holds leverage over politicians there. The source of the polonium should have been traced, and the potential sources should also be subject to inspection.